Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am Ted Santos, and I am your co-host of The Creative Alchemist. And we come to you live every Thursday from 7 until 8, and we talk about your business and your business needs. We address leadership, culture, health, money, incentive plans. We've had guests that have taken on and given you tips from their expertise in many, many different industries. And tonight will be no different. It will be very special. I think this one will be very important for many of you. For some of you who are benefiting from the pandemic and you're looking to grow and expand your business, you want to sit tight and listen closely to this conversation. In fact, I would suggest that you may want to call in and have a conversation with our guest. For those of you who would like to call in, the phone number is 516-387-1640. That's 516-387-1640. Before we introduce our guest, you all know I never take this journey alone. You have to meet my co-host, Lori. Let them know you're here.
So hello, everyone. It's Lori Miller from LGC Interior Design, and it's great to be back. For those of you who weren't able to listen in last, or who listened in last week, and I wasn't there, I was at the Man Woman of the Year Awards for Leukemia Lymphoma, and I have to say that I am saddened. I did not win the title, but we did win the fight against cancer, and we did raise, I think, $964,000. So that is a fairly decent sum, considering we could not have any in-person events or anything live. So I think all of the people who ran and all of their teammates deserve a huge congratulations. And the Blue Angels did raise $26,000. So thank you for your help in fighting cancer, a very, very worthy cause and a cause that's personal to me. So enough about that. You won't hear any more about my fundraising efforts for the next week, okay?
That's actually impressive.
Thank you.
That's
impressive.
You all raised a lot of money. Wow, very good.
Rewarding. And thank you for your help.
You're welcome. Speaking of raising money, but go ahead, keep going.
Exactly. Speaking of raising capital, Hermes Investment Management, and I'm going to let Tony Chavez, I think I pronounced it correctly, tell you a little bit more about himself and how he goes about raising money, and he has some pretty impressive numbers himself. So, Tony, introduce yourself, tell us how people can meet you, what you do, and let's talk about $30 million.
Hey, Ted. Hi, Lori. Glad to be on your show. And yes, I've been in investment since 2013, and I created this company 3.5 years ago to help small and mid-sized companies raise capital and connect with investors. So there will be a lot to say on the topic. During the show, I'd like to explain some things that can be helpful for owners of companies and what's the way to approach investors.
Okay. So if anyone who is small or mid-sized business and you have had the benefit of expanding during COVID, and whether it's global acquisitions, if you have a good problem of growing so fast that you may need capital for additional expansion, or you're looking to start a business, you're a startup, and you have a pre-revenue model, there are many different reasons that people will want to raise capital, and Tony's here to talk about some of those reasons that people would. So once again, I'll tell you, if you'd like to call in and really ask Tony some important questions about what you're looking to do, the number is 516-387-1640. That's 516-387-1640. Tony, I want to ask you a question. Investors. So what kind of investors are good for small and medium-sized businesses?
That's a good question. Not all investors are a good fit for smaller companies. I would go to angel investors, people who invest in early stage companies, and maybe small funds. I would not usually go to venture capitalists. It's an error lots of companies do when they're too small. Venture capitalists usually are for later stages of growth, when there's significant revenue already, when there's 5 to 10 million in revenue each year. These are the type of investors I would approach.
So angel investors. So maybe we should take a step back. What are the size companies, and do you look at any specific industries? So when you say small to medium size, what's the smallest and what's the largest and medium size? So can you give us a range?
Well, it's before revenue or early revenue. So some companies don't have revenue yet. They have they may have a product or a service that's in place. And we also help companies that have initial revenue, I would say up to a few million dollars per year. These are the companies we focus on.
Okay, so you work with startups, someone who has a prototype for a product, and they are looking to raise capital so that they can scale their business and be able to commercialize the product. Is that a good way to express it?
Exactly. Ideally, they are talking to clients, and even if they don't have revenue yet, they have a product that's developed and tested, and the clients are interested, and now they need the help of an investor to take the company to the next level.
Okay. All right. So And then on the opposite end of the spectrum is a company that has a few million dollars in revenue, gross revenues a year. And what are the circumstances that you generally see businesses that have clients and revenue? What are the reasons they may want to raise capital?
Sometimes they have revenue, they have clients, and they want to expand, and they want to do more sales and marketing, and usually that's costly. For example, if you do marketing online, either organically or if you do advertising online, that's costly, and an investor who has capital can help with the marketing costs, and it can work very well when there's a proven model. It's like you put $1 in, and then you can get more clients with that advertising and marketing expenditure.
Okay. So, sales and marketing is one reason. Any other reason? Businesses raise capital and they come to you?
Yes, sometimes they have costs to develop the product further, and to pay for the staff expenses. I would be careful with that one. It's good to keep staff expenses and owner expenses to a minimum until the company has a proven model and revenue. But investors can understand that there are costs a company needs to cover until the revenue is generated.
Okay. What about for mergers and acquisitions? Do you do that at all or not?
It's not something we focus on. So if it's a bigger company, you can go to an investment bank and they will help you with a merger and acquisition. And for smaller companies, you can go to a business broker and they will help with the process of an acquisition. I found it's good to focus on something like capital raising and do it well.
Okay. And any industries that you focus on in particular?
We focus on two. We do tech and impact investment. Within tech, we help companies like cybersecurity companies, artificial intelligence companies, and other companies in blockchain, e-commerce platforms, and apps. Mobile phone apps that render service. For in impact investment, this covers companies that want to have a positive impact on society in addition to making money. So it's companies that build renewable energy solutions, and also we help projects in for environmental sustainability and also for social responsibility.
What do you mean by social responsibility? That's a broad term.
That's true. For example, we worked with a company that in the U.S. that helps with housing in sectors of a city that where housing is difficult, where the people have problem finding housing. So it's a fund that builds houses and buildings in areas of that particular city that needs more housing.
Okay. All right. And is there a minimum and a maximum that you raise for people for companies in dollars?
Typically, we work with raises between $500,000 to $5 million.
Okay.
We go up to $10 million. Above that, it's more of an investment banking process, so it's a bigger capital raise, and it's a more formal process.
Okay. So you talked about the kinds of investors you warned small and the smaller midsize about going to VCs or venture capitalists. You mentioned angel investors. Can you talk a little bit about that? What is an angel? Why do they call people angel investors?
Well, an angel investor is someone who helps early stage or early revenue companies to grow. And they are willing to take more of a risk with each company because, let's say, a company you see on the stock market and they have already a fairly high market capitalization, they have a significant amount of resources, people generally feel that those companies are lower risk. And that's true. However, for each company, because it's later stage, the company already has revenue and they have an established team and employees. Angel investors will help companies that may have just a few employees, maybe up to 10, 20 employees, and they help at the early stage of a company. Now, usually the skilled angel investors, they will invest in many companies to cover their risk. And they have a significant percentage of their investment that will fail. And it's okay because to compensate for that, when one company does well, the return will be very high. It will be higher than for a more established company.
Okay. And generally, how you mind talking about how much angel investors are comfortable investing, and do they? Yeah, I'll start with that. How much is an angel investor normally put into a company?
Typically, it's between $50,000 and $500,000, maybe up to $1 million. Yes.
And that's one angel investor will do up to $1 million.
Yes, $1 million is already a big amount for an angel, but that's possible.
Okay, all right. And where do you find angel investors?
Well, you have groups online of angel investors. They some people who invest regularly, they like to talk to other investors and exchange ideas, and they like to review companies together. And then this way it saves them time, and one angel investor may miss something and another may notice something else about the company. So, and you do have angel investors who work alone. I think for a company which is in a given city, it's good to look for investors in their area or people that they're connected with in the network. That's a good way to start.
Okay. All right. So angel investors, like you said, sometimes they can work alone, and $1 million is a large amount for an angel investor, but it sounds like you're saying they also work as a group, as a collective. So what is that, like 5 or 10, and maybe they each put in $50,000? Is that an example of what an angel investor would do?
Well, I've noticed they like to exchange ideas. They may not invest with other angel investors. I see one company may raise from between 1 and 3 up to 5 people for a round. Yeah, it's like that. And you have people who invest regularly, maybe they invest in 5 to 10 companies each year. And there are people who may be a high net worth individual, and they have some capital with different kinds of investments, maybe in real estate, maybe in the stock market, maybe just in cash, and they also want to invest in companies, but they don't invest very often, maybe once or twice a year maximum. So you have different profiles like that.
So how does an angel investor get paid back, or do they not, and they just, you know, put out their money and hope that, you know, there'll be a huge return?
Well, they do look for a return. They also look for how their money will be protected. The first, a lot of investors, their first concern is not to lose the money invested. So that's an important thing to address when talking with investors is to be able to talk to their concerns. And the return that they look can vary. I mean, on the stock market, the I hear the expectation is a return of 15% per year. For angel investors, it can be much higher. I think anywhere between 15% and 50%, 50 is
really
is what they look for. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So CEOs. Sorry, go ahead, Lori.
No, I said that's pretty significant on a 50% and, you know, money back return.
Right.
It is. It's not easy to be an angel investor because the companies, it's hard to identify which ones will succeed. And there is a high return also. And it can be very rewarding for them.
Right. Which makes sense why they would do that.
A CEO needs to be prepared for angel investors that are looking for returns above 25, you know, between that 25 to 50%, they need to be prepared to structure an organization in a sales and marketing strategy that will give them those returns.
And I think that's possible for early stage companies. If it's a company that already has 20 million or $50 million in revenue each year, then it's harder to achieve. If it's very early stage companies, it's definitely possible.
Okay. What happens? So two questions. Are angel investors taking, and maybe you can explain the difference, are they taking debt or equity in a company, and what's the difference between the two?
The two standard investments I see are an equity investment where they will buy a share of the company, and you also have convertible notes. So this is a loan which can be converted to equity later. So the investment starts as a loan with a the owners of the company pay a percentage for the loan like you would do to a bank. And after maybe 1 year or 2 years, then this loan is converted to equity. So then the investor becomes, he owns shares of the company. These are the two most standard investments I see.
And what's the typical amount, or is it? How much the investors will, what percentage of the company they'll own?
That's a good question. It's anywhere between 10% and 50%, 50 of a company. Usually business owners don't want to give more than 50% of the company because it's, then they lose control of the company and it's
right.
less of a motivation for them.
Okay. So what happens if the investors are only getting a 5% return for 2 years in a row? Do they want to take over the company? I mean, are there consequences for the founder?
Normally, no. It's part of the investment risk. Some companies will have a high return and some companies will have a lower return. 5% is better than the company going bankrupt.
right.
And the investor losing their money. The main concern of the investment of the investor is that they lose their money, that the company disappears. And that can happen, and that's part of early stage investment.
And what happens if the founders do lose the company? Are they liable for the house or other assets?
Well, it's something to be careful about. Normally, no. It's equity in a company. The company disappears. The equity disappears. For a convertible note, there can be collateral. It's a loan initially. So the founders have to be careful what they put as collateral, if collateral is required.
Okay. All right. And so what's important to investors? What's important? How do you approach them? How do you find, you were already talking where you find them. They can be a high net worth individual. What's important to them? Is it just
That is a great question, and I find that lots of founders do not understand well what is important to an investor. One simple way to look at it is to look at an investor like you would look at a client. When you approach a potential client, you want to present your service and reassure them that the service is going to be great, that there will be no problems, and if there are problems, you will help them as much as possible. There's a sales and marketing process like that with a potential client. And it's the same. It's one way to look at it for investors. There is a significant amount of effort that is required to find investors for your company. I'm remembering a capital raise right now where I had to approach 50 people in my network, and two said yes, and that was enough. That was great. I did have to spend time and effort and preparation to talk to 50 people. To answer your question about what is important for them, so there's different things. So as I mentioned earlier, it's important to show that you will care for their money even more than your own. And later on, they may invest more. It's possible that if there's good results, they may invest more. And it's good to have this attitude. They want to see exactly why you need the money and how it will impact positively a company. So they may want to see if I give you $200,000, how is it going to help your company exactly over the next 3 months, over the next 6 months? How are you going to expand operations and sales? They want to see results in a way, and a specific plan. Here are two things that investors think about.
Okay. What are some of the fears investors have? I mean, aside from the company going out of business and they lose their money, what are some of the other fears that investors have when they're looking at a company?
Usually they don't like when founders of a company exaggerate the projections of and the expectations. Experienced investors will be able to tell if it's realistic to have 5 million in sales within 5 years. So it's good to be open and transparent and be okay to share potential difficulties, what could go wrong, still be confident and have a precise plan. So it's, yeah, yeah. One thing I can add is they may ask, what is your motivation? They may ask, why did you create this company? And what will keep you going for years and grind every day to do the work, the long hours? It's not a good idea to present to an investor and say, I want to make lots of money. We're going to pay ourselves big salaries. And it may sound obvious, but it's good to present like that.
Okay.
Yeah, I can't imagine people would actually do that, but I'm sure that there are. It's like, oh, you know, we want to make a million or two, and I'm going to go shopping, so I need a good salary.
Need a Lamborghini.
Right. And I'm sure that happens, but it just seems, you know, like, why would you say that?
Yes, and it's not necessarily said explicitly, but it can come across like that. There needs to be a passion, motivation to go through the initial hard years of a business and like that.
I can imagine. So what else would you do to approach them? What are some things that you could say? Let's say, I don't know, I was at a bar and someone was like, oh, I just do investments on ideas and I had a great idea. Like, what would I say to them?
Well, I think there's three things. The first one is to have a good match between what the company is creating, what the team is creating, and their experience. So let's say there's someone who is a specialist in cybersecurity. They've been a specialist for 15 years. And suddenly they identify something in the market that they could solve. They could solve a problem. And they may not be very experienced as an entrepreneur. Still, they know that there's a demand. They have created something, and now they need a little bit of help to market it and to expand the product creation. That's good. There is a good match between the market and the people who are creating it. It's better if the team has created a company before and they have sold it or it's still active, but it's not mandatory. It can still work if there's a good match. And now it's also good to have a very precise marketing plan. That's important. It's not enough to say we're going to find clients on social media, we're going to do advertising, we're going to talk to our network. There needs to be a very well articulated plan that describes where the clients are coming from, how you're approaching them, how you're convincing them. This needs to be well presented as well. And the third thing that usually founders do well is presenting their product and also presenting some financials. Yes, that's three things I can think of.
Very good. And do you do marketing plans? You're like, because like you, I mean, you obviously have a successful business. You have identified, you yourself are looking for the investors. So do you have a marketing plan on how you're going to work?
We advise them on the marketing and the presentation to investors. We really focus on the communications with the investors, introducing founders to investors. And that's where the highest value is, because investors typically do not talk with founders who are not already in their network, and we have people we talk with regularly, so when we introduce them to a new company, they know it's potentially interesting for them and it can save time for their research of good companies.
Very cool.
Okay.
Now, as you as a business owner, what about you personally? Do you have your own marketing plan?
I do. I mean, it's been working well for the past 3 years. We do marketing on LinkedIn, and then we do Zoom calls and phone calls with company founders and investors. That's how we've been finding clients and investors for the past 3 years. So it's been working well.
So I forgot what it's called.
Well, for people raising capital, has COVID slowed that down? Has it been an impediment?
Well, it was an impediment from March 2020 until August 2020. We still did a couple of deals then. Then it restarted in September last year. And since December, January, I think it's been at 70%, 80% capacity. And I think with the, there's less restrictions now. So I think we'll be at 100%, back to 100% in September. There's a lot of capital now in the financial system. The central banks have printed a lot of money, and the governments have helped financial companies and businesses. So the investment world is doing well.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, it's all really good news, right? Can't ask for anything more than that, except for gas to go down.
So are there any other, aside from COVID, are there any other difficulties to raise capital?
Well, it's always hard to raise capital. It's never easy. I think raising capital is harder than finding new clients. It's something to be aware of. For yes, yes.
Why do you say that?
I mean, my perception is that the media makes it sound easy. Sounds like anybody sexy. It sounds like anybody can be like the Facebook team 15 years ago, and you can go out and meet venture capitalists and raise $100 million for your new company. But it's actually very hard. There's a lot of competition to access capital and to build a company and a presentation that's appealing to investors.
Okay. So it's just difficult, period. It's not easy to do.
I mean, it's a skill. And it's just that lots of founders are not aware that it's hard. They're aware that creating a good product is difficult. They're aware that marketing to clients is difficult. A lot of them do not really know how the investment process works, and that it's a skill, and there's it's an investment of time and presentation.
Okay, so what do you do? Do you just raise, is that why you raise capital for companies? Because it's so difficult and it can be a distraction. So if you're running a business or you're expanding, developing new products, raising capital, it's, from what you're saying, it's that hard. It can be a distraction from getting what's more needed, is clients, right? You need clients to be more attractive to investors, except doing both is very difficult. So are companies paying you to go out and raise capital for them?
Yes, and what we offer is the experience and the skill to do that, to communicate with investors, and also access to investors in our network who know us. Because they know us, they're open to hearing from new companies that may be a good fit for them. So we save time for the founders of a company and also for investors, because it takes time for investors also to research companies and to find ones that are that may be a good fit for them. There's competition between investors also. It's not always easy to find good companies to invest in. Does that answer your question?
Well, I mean, so that's you're paid specifically to take that load off the founder. Is that what you do?
Yes. Yes, we help them to find investors and to communicate with them. That's what I would say we do.
So are you doing any of the presentations, or the founder and his team is responsible for that?
We talk with the investors first, and we identify how interested they are in a company. Are they just asking basic questions, or are they really interested? If they're really interested, then we'll do a call with the founders.
Okay.
It saves time for both parties.
And how much time can it take? Let's say it's January 1st, and you meet. You have a client who's looking to raise $2 million. And it's January 1st. How long should they anticipate before they close on that and have a check?
They can have results within a month or two. Sometimes it takes longer. It can be 3 to 6 months. Surprisingly, the early stage is faster than the latest stage of the process of funding. There's more paperwork, and there's the companies are bigger for later stages, so it can take 3 to 12 months when you're raising for a bigger company.
Well, that leads me to a question. Go ahead, keep going.
Yes, I just wanted to add that an individual investor can be able to make a decision quicker than a venture capitalist firm that has a cycle and they have a process. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to add that.
Right. They have meetings and they're looking at several different companies. Right.
Exactly.
Right. And they have different capital and how much do we want to allocate. Right. There are more decisions. So I have a couple of questions, but one is related to what you're saying. So it takes longer. I assume that's because they have to do valuation. So if you're an angel investor and you want to take 20% equity or, own 20% of the company, how do you know that 1 million, how do you know 20% of the company is worth $1 million? Is there some sort of evaluation process? And can you talk a little about that?
That's a good question. So it's not easy to evaluate a company that is pre-revenue. What they do in California, in the Silicon Valley, for example, is they compare a small company to other companies that were the same 5 years ago, and it gives them an idea of how much the company will be worth 5 years later.
Okay.
Now, if it's just at the idea stage, I think a company is worth between $250,000 and $500,000. If there's a team in place and an experienced team and with a solid plan, it may be somewhat higher, up to $1 million. If there's a product with a prototype, tested product, it can be $1 to $2 million. And if there's a customer base and partners, contracts already in place. It's 2 to 5 million. That's what my research shows.
Okay. So, and you just mentioned team. How important is that? I mean, does it matter if you just get people who are just smart? I mean, you know, you hear a lot of investors say they're really betting on the team. The product, right, they have to like the product, except it's the team that they're really investing in. Is that true, or is that just a rumor?
It is very true. Experienced investors, we look at the history of the team and how well they worked together. Will they be able to work well and deliver on their plan? It's easier for an investor to make a decision if it's founders who have already had success. So a founder who's already built two companies and he's sold one and the other one is active and managed by someone else, and that person is creating a third company still in the same industry. I mean, that is a proven track record. So even if it's early stage, an investor who's been following that founder may be comfortable investing. Now, if there's not a track record of creating successful companies, it can still work if it's a good match between what they are creating and their professional experience, if they have a good business plan.
Okay. So I've heard investors say they'd rather take an A team, a top A-class team with a B plan instead of a B team with an A plan. What do you think of that?
I think that can be true. I mean, an A team, I think, would have a plan. Yes, I mean, there are exceptions. I've heard cases where you have a successful entrepreneur and he's worked with investors before and he exits his last company and now he goes to the investors and she says, this is what I want to create next. And they trust him and they write him a check. But that's more the exception than the rule. There needs to be a serious plan in place.
Okay.
So for those of us who don't know, could you explain what an A team is and a B team?
Well, ideally, it's a team that has the right experience for the product they are creating. And we're working with a company right now, and they're creating an AI product that helps insurance companies to identify if an insurance claim, the amount that is claimed is correct or if it's too high. And the family of the founder has been in the auto industry for three generations. He and his co-founder, they have been in software development and AI for 15 years. And they have been talking with insurance companies for 10 years as clients or as part of their profession. So they're very experienced in that particular niche. It's very precise what they are creating, and there's a demand in the market. So this is very interesting for an investor because it's very precise, there's demand, the team has the right experience.
Mm-hmm. I understand.
So that's an A team.
I got it. So if someone was looking to, let's say, develop I'm in the mental health field. I've been in it forever. And if I wanted to develop some sort of an app that had to do with mental health, you know, being that I was a director or whatever, then I would be a better candidate and put on the A team as opposed to someone who didn't have that experience.
Yes, for sure. I hear regularly from people who have a job and let's say they're a software developer, or they but they're really working on something specific, say in banking, and they have a dream of creating something for in social media, but they don't have necessarily experience in social media, so that's quite different already,
right.
And they haven't created a company. So I think there's several steps they have to take before they're ready to really approach investors. That's what I meant with what I explained earlier with the A team is there's different pieces that need to be in place before a company is ready to take off.
Right. And you do all of that pre-screening to get the company that is looking for the investor prepared?
Yes, we identify what are the strengths and weaknesses of a company. And it's okay that things are not perfect and that there are weaknesses. It's just important when communicating with the investors to be able to present in a way that will respect the amount that can be invested in a company that's at this stage. I'm not sure I'm explaining that well, but
you did. It was very good. Thank you.
Okay.
So we have, I believe, like 10 minutes left. So if you want to tell people how to reach you, that would be great.
Yes, so my company is Hermes Investment Services. So it's Hermes, like the Greek god. There's a website, and then I can be found on LinkedIn.
Okay, so you're also on LinkedIn.
Yes.
Are you on any other social media or just LinkedIn?
Just LinkedIn. That's worked well for us, so that's that's the only social media we're on right now.
Okay.
Okay.
So we don't take too many clients. We don't take too many clients at any given time. We work with between 3 and 5 companies at a time. It's this way we can give a good attention to each company and help them reach out to investors.
So, question, Tony. Some entrepreneurs have kind of risked it all, right? They've taken out a second mortgage on a home. They've cash advanced on credit cards, and maybe they've been late, their credit's not in the best shape. So how does that affect their ability to raise capital with investors?
I think it's good to be upfront with investors about that. It's better that the investors finds out about it earlier than later. And then it may affect the valuation of the company and how much of the company they will need to give to an investor to make it work for the investor as well. But I think the critical, it can still work. The critical part is will they be able to deliver, to find clients, to generate revenue? That's what's important, I think.
Okay.
Absolutely.
The entrepreneur and his or her team is what is most important.
I think so. And the ability to work together, to work well, is a real skill. Both in terms of soft skills, communication, and hard skills, being able to create the product and generate and create goals and project management and all that. Yeah.
Okay. Now, do any of the investors offer anything else aside from money? So should a founder be thinking about more than capital when he's approaching investors?
I think that's very important. It's like when you're looking for a job, I think with experienced people realize that for their career, it's important to not take any job, the first job that they're accepted to. And it's very important to have criteria, to know what kind of investors they are looking for, if they just want the money and the passive investor, or if they want someone who will help them to reach out to clients, to connect with other investors, someone who has contact within their industry. There's other things that an investor can bring to the table.
Okay. So as a founder, they shouldn't just be I'm so grateful you wrote me a check for $1 million, thank you, and I'm going to go work. You're saying the founder should be able to make demands on the investors that they contribute more than capital.
I think it's a very good idea, yes.
Okay.
And, it's important to vet the investor as well and identify what are their expectations. And if this person will work well with the company.
Okay. It's in the investor's best interest too. I mean, if they want a return that's more than 30 or 40%, then they should be willing to make introductions for clients or even second round investors or even talent, right? So if they're looking for talent, I mean, these are all things. Do some investors serve almost like a board member where you can talk about strategy with them? Do investors participate that way?
Yes, and it's in the investor's interest as well to help as much as they can to so that the investor succeeds. It's important to have those conversations.
Okay. Do you do any of those services yourself for your clients?
We help as much as we can and also as much as the founder asks. We have experience talking with investors and identifying what can work well on a deal. Sometimes founders want to do it themselves. Sometimes they ask us advice. Definitely something we can help with.
Okay, all right. Can you tell people how to get in touch with you again? How do they find you?
Maybe it could be put on the page of the podcast. I don't know. The website is HermesInvestmentServices.biz. So it's Hermes, like the Greek god, Investment Services. And we have a page on LinkedIn as well. It's the same, Hermes Investment Services. And my name is Tony Chauvet, so they can reach me on LinkedIn as well.
Okay, perfect. Tony, this
Thank
is great,
so
very
much.
Valuable.
Very informative.
Yeah.
We appreciate it.
I hope it can help. That's great, yeah. I hope it can help business owners and startup founders.
Yeah.
Yep.
Absolutely.
I think you. Yep. Yeah. For anyone who's been sort of thinking about it and trying to figure out what to do, Tony I brought Tony on because he clearly demonstrated he knows what he's doing in this world of investing. And as he said, it's a very time consuming and more difficult than people believe. So, if you are in that market, please reach out to him. And Tony, I really appreciate you taking the time out to speak to our listeners. So thank you very much.
Yeah.
I appreciate being on the show. Yes, that was very nice.
Thank you.
All right, everyone. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you in next week on Thursday night, 7 o'clock.
You got it. Take care, everyone. Have a good night.
Bye. Bye, everyone.
Take care. Bye-bye.